This is Radio Parallax, a slightly different perspective from a slightly different view, with topics that include matters in science, technology, history, politics, current events, and whatever we damn well please. And now the host of Radio Parallax, Douglas Everett.
Welcome to the program, which we're the very first to admit is not really a political show, but we sometimes delve into politics. And considering what's going on in the world right now, particularly in the election cycle of the U.S. right now, we think it is necessary to kind of stick to that. In particular, the fact that the mental derangement of Donald J. Trump is appearing increasingly evident even to the mainstream media, which seems to be papering it over considerably. But you know, when an orange-faced guy with a bad comb-over tells the public that he's better looking than Kamala Harris, well, what else can you do but look at that as... Now we're going to devote our second segment today to extracting some of the best work we've found from people looking into the nature of Trump, and I dare say the existential threat that he represents to the American democracy. A democracy which is, well, not even remotely perfect, but certainly could, as time goes on, get a lot less perfect. In fact, it might take, well, not that much for the term democracy to kind of go out the window. You know, I can't resist quoting from Eugene Robinson in the Washington Post on this topic. Robinson asked, and this is in late June, by the way, is Donald Trump okay? At a recent Nevada rally, the 78-year-old embarked on a lengthy, muddled disquisition on whether it'd be better to be electrocuted by a boat battery or eaten by a shark. He chose electrocution, by the way. Robinson notes, we in the media have become inured to Trump's verbal incontinence, but it ought to be front page news. President Biden, who is old, at least makes sense. Trump, who is also old, rants like someone you'd cross the street to avoid. Writing in The Atlantic, Tom Nichols said the idea of this mentally unstable man serving a second term should terrify every American voter. The grown-ups who managed Trump's cognitive and emotional issues first time around are gone, never to return. His next White House will be staffed with nothing but toadies, pre-vetted for loyalty. The 45th president is unwell, and he should not serve as the 47th. And you know, it seems clear to the world at this point that all that effort to portray Joe Biden as just too old and out of touch certainly now appears to be backfiring. Donald Trump at this point is easily the oldest person ever to run for president of the United States.
And the craziest.
Yeah. Now, keep in mind that when Trump became president on that sad day 8 years ago, was at that point the oldest person ever to take the office at age 70 years, 220 days. The previous record holder had been Ronald Reagan, who took office at 69 years, 349 days. Which means if you do the math that when Reagan left office exactly 8 years later, he was 77 and 349 days. And, although I hate to say it, showing clear signs of dementia. Now, at the present time, Donald Trump is 78 and a couple of extra months. As we speak, he's 3 months older than Reagan when Reagan left office. Now, it is true that Donald Trump's record as the oldest president was broken 4 years later by Joe Biden, who took the office at age 78 and 61 days. But you know what? President Biden is now on the sidelines. And if we really want to do a great comparison, which I'm quite tickled to note, we can compare Donald Trump to former President Clinton. Clinton had a birthday a few days back. He's 78 and a few extra days. Donald Trump is 78 and a couple of months. Now, the Democrats can't run Bill Clinton again because of the 25th Amendment. But keep in mind that if they did, he'd be younger than Trump. We hope that this groundswell continues to point out that Trump is unfit for office, and we'll certainly go into that in our second segment today. But one just has to reflect on how it is things can change quickly in the realm of politics. A couple of months back, we were looking around and seeing the situation as, well, Mr. McMillan. Well, what do you know? With the changes that have taken place over the last couple of months, it's kind of more like... We would like to point out with a great deal of stress that happy days are not yet here again. But hope is certainly back, and that's a good thing. We've mentioned in this program how it is we've had extensive archives and still have maintained extensive archives for the purpose of talking about all sorts of things on the air. One thing I stumbled upon in an old file was some pieces I had on Howard Dean. Remember Howard Dean? Howard Dean was an excellent candidate the Democrats had put forward in 2004, and for a while he was the front runner. I discovered looking through old bank records of mine that I gave him a pretty good contribution back then. But if your memory serves you correctly, and we hope it does, you will note that in 2004, Howard Dean was not the Democratic Party's nominee for the presidency. That went to John Kerry. In one of the more bizarre episodes of my political lifetime, I would note that Howard Dean got cashiered by the national press for, I guess you'd call it, excessive exuberance in one of his campaign stops, because he was enthusiastically referring to places the campaign was going to go. The national press seemed to label him as unhinged, which, looking back from the present state, is astoundingly ironic. Anyway, it does seem that back in 2004, some forces were unleashed to derail Howard Dean. And boy, are we not going to go into that today. But nevertheless, let's just say that as a possibility. I think everyone would have to acknowledge that if you irk a sufficient number of incredibly powerful people, things may not go so well for you. And I do want to speculate at this point about something that I have not seen anywhere else, but comes from a little blurb I stumbled upon originating in the Wall Street Journal, a Rupert Murdoch publication we don't generally have a great deal of respect for, but hey, even a stop clock is right twice a day. At any rate, writing in the Wall Street Journal, Andrew Restuccia and Nick Timiraos noted that Donald Trump apparently thinks he could do better than the Federal Reserve Chairman, and that he'd like the opportunity to try. Notes the Journal, in the most direct acknowledgement yet of his long-standing desire to chip away at the central bank's independence, the Republican candidate said a week ago that he feels strongly that the president should have a say over how the Federal Reserve sets interest rates. Trump, Trump said he was qualified to do this because I made a lot of money. And I'm sorry, I have to laugh as I think of the Rolling Stone article, which showed that according to Trump's own IRS records, he lost more money than anyone else in America over a 10-year period. Trump being a billionaire has always been a fiction. So while it is true that he did, I think, undisputedly make a lot of money, unfortunately, he lost even more. Trump has criticized the current Fed Chairman Jerome Powell for, quote, getting it wrong a lot. Now, the Journal notes that economists and even Trump's own advisors warn against meddling with the Fed's independence, which has been assiduously guarded since the 1970s, when Richard Nixon put pressure on the Fed and evidently set the stage for a surge in inflation. I would note that in my personal opinion, next to the nuclear codes, the thing I least want to see Donald Trump in charge of would be Federal Reserve interest rates. This is the guy that killed hundreds of thousands of Americans because he was afraid that a very aggressive approach to COVID would damage the stock market and thereby hurt his chances for re-election. Can you imagine if he were allowed to have a say in what interest rates were? And I suspect that a lot of the proverbial adults in the room are taking a look at that and going, well, that probably won't work out well. Writing in Bloomberg, Jonathan Levin weighed in on this matter, noting that presidents already get to nominate members of the Federal Reserve Board of Governors for 14-year terms, as well as nominate the chair and the vice chair for 4-year periods. Noting any plan that suggests further intervention has to be, quote, one of the worst economic proposals ever floated by a major party presidential candidate, end quote. There's some talk about the Fed cutting rates a bit in the near future, which would probably give the economy a boost and probably help the Democrats on Election Day. Trump has warned Jerome Powell not to cut rates before the election. And you know what? I don't know much about banking, but my feeling is that trying to push around bankers is probably a bad idea. As we'll see in our second segment today, in the wake of what he perceived as bad publicity, largely plucked from thin air, Trump was then threatening Google, which is probably, you know, I'm thinking, probably also not a good idea. And you know, Mr. Miller, one thing we have to find in the near future is that movie, The Apprentice, which was shown in London, got rave reviews, but was not picked up by any distributor in the United States for obvious reasons.
Probably available online somewhere.
Let's look. Anyway, just as the political scene in America seems to have gotten improved by moving away from doom and gloom 24/7 to a more upbeat attitude, we too on this program should probably take a few minutes and just lighten the mood a little. And to do that, I think I will go to one of our perennial favorites, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Before this, I think we will use the last two issues of The Week magazine, whose reporting we are indebted to on a weekly basis. Its August 16th issue notes that it was a good week that week for canine chic, after Italian fashion house Dolce & Gabbana debuted Fefe, a designer fragrance just for dogs. Described as an olfactory masterpiece with hints of musk, sandalwood, and liang liang, according to D&G, the 3.4-ounce bottle of Fefe retails for just $109. Now, personally, we wonder if the animal rights people shouldn't get involved in this particular case, because they're obviously making this fragrance for the owner and not the dog. If they were trying to please Fido, we think it would contain hints of musk, sandalwood, and offal. And the magazine notes it was a bad week for, I guess you'd say, for judicial decisions, with the news that the Ohio Supreme Court ruled that, quote, boneless wings, unquote, may contain bones. A state lawmaker says he's writing legislation that will force courts to follow a common sense test. Senator Bill DeMora says no court using the test would rule that something that says boneless could have a bone in it. Now, hold on. Could we include the Trump Supreme Court in coming to that common sense decision? That doesn't seem to be their strong suit. Now, asked how his bill would define common sense, Senator DeMora invited reporters to imagine a scenario in which common sense dictated something, which seems fair enough. But I think what we really need is for Supreme Court justices to imagine some things along those lines. And finally, it was an ugly week, at least judging by the week of August 16th, for wishful thinking, after Donald Trump predicted in a social media post that, quote, crooked Joe Biden, unquote, will crash this month's Democratic National Convention and try to, quote, take back the nomination, unquote, that, quote, was unconstitutionally stolen from him, unquote, by Kamala Harris. Now, Mr. Millen, as far as I know, President Biden made an appearance at the Democratic Convention last night.
I know that he was scheduled.
Yeah. I am pretty sure he didn't try to take back the nomination, or we'd have seen that in the headlines.
You mean Donald Trump said something that was inaccurate?
So it seems. All right, good, bad, and the ugly, round two from this week. It was a good week this week for sentimental journeys. After mechanical problems with his own 757 jet led Donald Trump to fly to several campaign events in a charter plane once owned by his former friend Jeffrey Epstein, the late financier and sex trafficker. The Trump campaign said it had no awareness of the Gulfstream's Epstein connection. And on the other hand, it was a bad week for, you might say, focus. I might say common sense. With the news that a Spanish man poured water over a 6,000-year-old cave painting in Andalusia, potentially causing irreversible damage, in an attempt to take a clearer photo of the ancient art for his Facebook post. And lastly, it was, I'd have to say, an ugly week for belief in self. After a survey found that 27% of British people believe they could qualify for at least one sport in the 2028 Los Angeles Olympics if they started training right now. Speaking of the Olympics, we have a slight follow-up on our discussion on last week's program about gender eligibility. And on further investigation, it turns out that one of the controversial characters in the controversy, described as female at birth, evidently genetically is XY, which would normally make her a he. But if you have a certain rare condition wherein receptors for hormones are absent, well, then the organs don't develop in the usual way, which in the XY individual tends to produce a penis and scrotum. But if the tissues do not respond as they would normally be expected to, then things may go the other way, and the individual will have a vagina. This condition actually applies to a famous female movie star who I shall not mention, and I think that's probably all I better say about that. All right, in the few minutes we have left for this segment, I think I'll delve back into the archival material that produced the Howard Dean stuff. This item comes from about the same era, January 2005, from Esquire magazine. They invited readers to submit their own What I've Learned column. Here's some of the winners. Wrote David Kamikow, there are two types of people in the world, and one of them puts ketchup on eggs. Wrote Mike Shinners, people who are vociferous about their ability to multitask are usually just good at being a jackass and moron at the same time. Wrote Jimmy McFarland, one of the things women claim is most important in a man is a sense of humor. In my years as a comedian, I guess Jimmy McFarland is a comedian, I've learned that they're usually referring to the humor of guys like Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, and Russell Crowe. Apparently, those guys are hilarious. Wrote a Dave Rogerson, never drive behind an old man wearing a hat. And from Costa Pharmakis came, most Greeks have never visited the Parthenon. Most French people rarely look at the Eiffel Tower. How many New Yorkers have actually visited the Statue of Liberty? Everyone wants to enter someone else's monument. That's why men will never stop cheating on their wives. And my personal favorite from a Jordan Wallens. Everything before the but is BS. And from November of 2006, we have an article titled What's in a Name, which I think we'll close with. Apparently in 2002, former Rolling Stone bassist Bill Wyman, who was born William George Perks, threatened to sue American journalist Bill Wyman for using his name. I can't get no satisfaction. I can't get me no satisfaction. In 1965, writers of the 1951 song Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious sued Disney over the Mary Poppins song Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. The songwriters lost. Well, the Jones reports that Malaysia prohibits naming a child after an insect, fruit, or vegetable, and bans undesirable names such as Smelly Dog or Hitler. Seems fair enough. Apparently in 2005, McDonald's offered rappers $5 every time one of their songs mentioned a Big Mac was playing on the radio. And reportedly in 1992, MTV banned Sir Mix-a-Lot's raunchy Babies Got Back. But in 2005, Target paid Sir Mix-a-Lot an undisclosed amount to change the chorus to Baby Got Backpack as part of its back-to-school marketing campaign.
Wow. I like big butts and I cannot lie. You other brothers can't deny. Now when a girl walks in with an itty-bitty waist and a round thing in your face, you get sprung. Wanna pull up tough, cause you know.
Well, Mr. Man tells me I've got about a minute left. So let's close with RFK Jr.
You sure?
God. Writing in The Atlantic, John Hendrickson noted that when RFK entered the presidential race, his candidacy threatened to tip the election to Donald Trump. But now that Kamala Harris is the Democratic nominee, RFK is felt to be more likely to draw votes away from Trump. As apparently RFK was drawing heavily from independent and counterculture voters unhappy with both Trump and the visibly diminished Joe Biden. Kamala Harris, however, is 11 years younger than the 70-year-old Kennedy, and polls show that her youthful energy and social media savvy are swinging many of those persuadable voters back. And no, we don't mean Baby's Got Backpack.
Baby got back.
Let's take a break. I'm Douglas Everett. This is Radio Parallax. We've got a lot of interesting stuff in segment two, so stick around.
I like them round and big, and when I'm throwing a gig, I just can't help myself. I'm acting like an animal. Now here's my scandal. I want to get you.